Okay, we will call to order the July 11th, 2012 meeting of the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll call, please.
Miller?
Aye.
McGill?
Here.
Steelmeyer? Scarlett?
Here.
Steele absent.
He's been appointed, so that'd
yeah,
be correct.
Yeah, do we count him in? Okay.
Everyone has received an agenda that was previously done. Do we have any additions or modifications to that agenda at this point? Okay, hearing. Okay. Motion and second to approve the agenda as submitted. All in favor, voice vote, indicate aye.
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 We have meeting minutes from the April 4th meeting of the Board of Adjustments that were submitted previously. Do we have any corrections or changes to those minutes?
Move approval of the minutes, April 4th.
Approval, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Do we have any general comments from the public this evening? Anyone that would like to be heard by the board before we get started? Okay. We have no old business to pertain to, and we will move on to new business with CUP 01-12, the Cornerstone Church of Christ CUP request. And I might state for people who might be new to this process, as we open a case here, we will then have the staff go through their report. We will ask the applicant to step forward then to the podium and to present whatever information that they would like to present. We will allow for opportunity for any comments from the public or third parties that would like to comment on that process. We will then allow the applicants any closing comments that they would like to have. At that point in time, we will close the case and we will begin deliberation. We will deliberate here in front of everyone and we'll come to a resolution. So that's the process for these, and so we will proceed with the first CUP.
Evening. First case this evening is CUP 0112. It's the Cornerstone Church of Christ CUP. This is the Zeering location of the Cornerstone Church of Christ, generally located at 14777 U.S. Highway 65. Size of the parcel is about 10 acres. Zoning is A1 agriculture. It's currently taxed as an exempt use as it does contain a church. And cities within 2 miles would be the city of Zeering, and the development plan does designate the property as cooperative planning area tier 2 as it is within 2 miles of the city of Zeering. Just want to remind the board, when it comes to the conditional use permit applications, the burden of persuasion is always on the applicant in these cases, and it is up to the applicant to prove that all legal standards have been met with conditional use permits. What we will do is we will go over what we feel as staff, how they have met those standards, and touch a little bit on some of the materials that were submitted by the applicant to help us meet those standards. Just going over some of the general information we have with this application. First, we noted that it is a predominantly agriculture area. It is surrounded by crop production land, acreages, and is surrounded by the wind farm that was approved a few years ago in that area. As the use is already established, evidence does show that it is not unsightly, obnoxious, nor offensive in appearance to any of the abutting or nearby properties. The use is surrounded by trees, shrubs, and open space on its northwest and south sides, and by U.S. Highway 65 on its east side. We did note that those factors provided a buffer for suitable transition between the surrounding uses and properties. However, we did note that there was no buffer or visual buffer between U.S. Highway 65 and this property to safeguard the visual resources such as glare and other nuisance factors such as noise and fumes. And again, that was a staff comment in the staff report. Ingress and egress is provided through a 25-foot wide driveway off of U.S. Highway 65. And according to the Iowa DOT's traffic counts, that portion of Highway 65 has annual daily traffic of approximately 1,680 cars. Application material submitted. They did not include the congregation use days and times for the staff to be able to determine if there are peak traffic times, which would cause a concern. However, we go back to that traffic count that was submitted, which is pretty typical for two-lane highways, so we're not seeing necessarily any peak times available on there. The applicant at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting did submit some overall numbers of what their congregation has looked like through the years. And again, it is a rather small church in comparison to some of the churches we have here in the county. We did look at a site plan from a previous zoning permit, which showed a total of 34 parking spaces, which would indicate that this use would have very little effect on traffic counts, as we just previously mentioned. However, looking at the aerial photo submitted with the subject application, it does show that vehicles are not necessarily parking in accord with that site plan. Still doesn't show that there are many more vehicles than that number that they included. And based off the measurements we took with the parking lot, just using GIS, we would estimate that it is entirely possible to fit up to probably 95 parking spaces in that parking area. Again, there's no evidence at this time that they're even close to that number. The land development regulations do outline maximum allowed parking numbers for auditoriums and general assembly areas. We do allow for a maximum of one space for every four seats located in the auditorium. And based off the original site plan that was submitted, we have calculated a total number of seats of approximately 128. For community centers, a maximum of one space for every 300 square feet is allowed. We did calculate a total of approximately 3,325 square feet of additional community space inside the building, and that is with the proposed addition. Those numbers would allow for a maximum of 32 spaces for the seating and an additional 11 spaces for the other areas for a total allowed number of 43 spaces. The site does have a sign located on the property, and that was approved through a zoning permit. In the comments on that application, it was noted that the 50-square-foot sign exceeded the 32-square-feet allowed cumulative sign area for the A1 zoning district, and also the sign is illuminated. However, since the sign was to be used in relation to the church, the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act gave the church immunity from Missouri County's sign regulations. The site plan does show a total of 8 lights on the site, 5 on the parking lot's east and south sides, and 3 near the building's loading area. Again, application materials are not giving any specifications on those lights, but based off the site visit that staff did, I think we were able to determine that those lights are definitely designed to not emit any light above the luminary and would not allow for light trespass, which is within accord of our regulations. We did note that the property is both in the Indian Creek and Minerva Creek watersheds and partially in the Sherman 36 drainage district. It does not contain any floodplain. The site is relatively flat. The 10 acres has a change in elevation of 8 feet. And the developed area of the site is located on its highest point, and the site's elevation decreases north and southwest from the developed area. We did note that there is an adequate vegetation buffer that surrounds the site's developed area, which helps safeguard environmental resources. Just looking at some pictures we have here, this is taken towards the entrance, looking towards the west on the property. This shot right here, located on the parking lot, this is kind of looking to the southwest. What's that? Northwest, that one is? Okay, northwest on that one. This one right here is taken from about the south boundary on the property, looking towards the north, towards the sign that is located there on the property. This one taken from the driveway entrance, looking a little bit south, showing the property in relation to Highway 65. This one here taken again from about that same location, looking a little bit more to the west. This one looking towards the northwest. This one here is looking towards the southwest. This one here is taken kind of from the southwest corner of the property, looking more towards the northeast. when we went to, we took this to the Planning and Zoning Commission, they wanted kind of an explanation on the Religious Exercise and Land Use and Institutions Persons Act, which we commonly refer to as RLUIPA. What that rule states is actually a federal code. The general rule is that no government shall impose or implement a land use regulation in a manner that imposes a substantial burden on the religious exercise of a person, including religious assembly or institution, unless the government demonstrates that imposition of the burden on that person, assembly, or institution is a furtherance of a compelling government interest or is the least restrictive means of furthering that compelling government interest. It goes on to kind of summarize that, I guess, in a little bit more terms here. But again, more or less, it just says that we cannot create any zoning law that would be detrimental to any church. Again, when the sign, we granted a RLUIPA exemption on that sign, and I think that was done some years ago when this act was first adopted. I think since that point, we wouldn't grant that same exemption on this sign, but nonetheless, at that time we did, and that's why the sign's a little bit bigger than what we normally allow in the A1 zoning district. Looking at the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, they did recommend approval of the conditional use permit. As you can see by the voting, it was a unanimous motion. With that, your alternatives are listed on the screen here above. Just wanted to explain one thing real quick, too, with this being an existing church. Some time ago when we first had zoning, churches used to be a permitted use in the A1 zoning district. Through the years, churches have kind of taken off, and we've seen some examples of churches that are much bigger than they used to be. When we first adopted zoning, some examples would be the two churches out there on Interstate 35 and Highway 30. Because of the increasing size of some churches, we did move them to a conditional use. That was after the time that this particular church was built. Because of that, any church that was created prior to us changing them to a conditional use, they were granted as legally established non-conforming uses. They're required to come into full conformance with zoning anytime they want to change the general footprint of their building. The applicants are proposing building a minor addition onto their church, which does trigger them needing the conditional use permit to move forward on that. So that's pretty much what leads us here tonight. And with that, if there's any questions on the application, I'd be happy to answer it.
Staff or anything about the findings of fact?
No.
Not that I'm aware of, no. And we didn't say no as well, too, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who would speak for the applicants this evening?
Good evening. My name is Ryan Helt. I'm with the church. Basically, what we're seeking to do here is, and I don't know, I assume you guys all have the application. Basically, what we're trying to do is on the north side of the church is build a 900 square foot addition just for a couple classrooms. Right now, we're not trying to expand our church all that much. I mean, we're not putting a big auditorium on. We're not trying to put a big, sanctuary or anything. Right now, what we're just trying to do is serve our current congregation. And the fact is, we just don't have enough classroom space. We have classes that are meeting in the sanctuary. Sunday school classes meeting in the sanctuary during that time. We just don't have enough spaces to put all the people for the number of classes we have. So that's basically what we're seeking to do here tonight is just to put two classrooms on the north side of our building. So it's pretty simple. Oh, good. Thank you. Last year, I thought I had a table of numbers. Last year, it was about 150 average weekly attendance. It's growing a little bit. I can show you. Can I show this down?
Okay. Have any further questions? So, you may be seated.
Okay, thank you.
Straightforward. Do we have any comments from the public this evening on this project? Okay, well, hearing none, I'm assuming you would defer on any closing statements then at this point? Not at this point in time. We may as we go through deliberation, so we'll go through that. Okay, we will then close this case and begin deliberations on CUP 01-12 on Cornerstone. The first items that we need to act on is to make sure that we put the findings of fact into order. Does anyone have any comments or questions or concerns on the findings of fact?
I don't know if anybody else has got questions. I move that we adopt the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
I'll second that.
Okay, we've got a motion by Fielmeyer, a second from McGill to adopt the findings of fact as prepared in the staff report presented to the Board of Adjustments. Roll call, please.
Fielmeyer? McGill?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Scarlett?
Yes.
Moving on towards the elements of the decision, Ryan, I do have one question. I mean, and this really has to do with some of the timing issues of the 2006 regs and everything. Is this property always going to be legally existing non-conforming, or is there any action that can be taken such that, let's say they wanted to put another 900-square-foot addition in next year. Is there anything that keeps us from continuing to...
Yeah, the conditional use permit itself will bring it into full conformance. So, yeah, exactly what we're doing here tonight. This fall, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
That would
be correct. That was why I was asking.
Oh, okay.
You would still, we'd still require the zoning permit to be submitted, the building permit.
You have to get a
permit,
but that was my question. See, you have a legally existing non-conforming property just due to the time period that you built versus when the regs were adopted. You built before the regs. So then the regs are kind of grandfathered on you. You are not required to change the condition of that parcel until tonight because you were making a change. But it would be correct then, which is why I wanted to clarify, that if you put another 900-foot addition on next year, you would have to apply for a building permit and go through the normal process, but you would not have to go through the conditional use process.
Well, and real quick, when I'm thinking of it too, man, you might want to step in. I'm not sure if it would trigger any sort of modification to the conditional use permit at all, depending on what it is. And what that is, and the board might be aware of this, once we do issue a conditional use permit, depending on how much is changing from the action that takes here tonight or what you're approving tonight, we have three different levels of modification, insignificant, minor and major. I think a majority of the modifications we see end up being insignificant. We administratively approve those. They have the building permit. More or less what they would have to do is just kind of submit a letter of their changes to what's being approved here tonight. We'd review those, determine the level of modification. Like I said, I think a majority of them are insignificant. So if you were building another addition onto the church, I think we would probably determine that to be insignificant. Now, if you're adding, if you're doubling the size of the church, for example, it might be a different modification. But nonetheless, depending on exactly what you're doing to change the property, it might take some further action by the board, but it might not. So.
Okay, moving on to the decision, there are criteria in there. We've got six criteria that are in there: compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, environmental protection are the first items that must be considered. Do we have any, if you've heard the staff reports, are there any concerns on any of those criteria?
No, the only thing that anybody would have any folks are concerned, I mean, at least what I've heard you, that is the sign. There's nobody ever complained about it. It seems to me that it's not our place to say at this point that it's not compatible with the development criteria.
I would agree.
I guess I prepared that we move to adopt the decision regarding the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
Hey, we've got a motion from Fielmeyer, second from Scarlett, to adopt the decision regarding the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment. Roll call, please.
Gill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Fielmeyer?
Then we come down to the actual form of the order. As in there, it would essentially be to approve the request as proposed.
Move to approve the request as proposed by the applicant in case number CUP01-12, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment, and in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding all the applicable legal principles have been satisfied.
Okay, we've got a motion by McGill and a second from Scarlett to approve the request as proposed by the applicant in case CUP01-2, and finding that all the applicable legal principles have indeed been satisfied.
Roll call.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Fielmeyer?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Your request is... we move on to the second order of business this evening, which is an appeal. This is an appeal number 01-12, the Wonder Appeal Request. So we move that over to staff.
As I don't know how familiar the board is with our appeal process, I know the staff report, we kind of included that in there, and I'll have some of it in the presentation here above. More or less what we're going to do is explain the decision we made, kind of give some reasonings for the decision we made, and I think at that point we'll just kind of leave it between the applicant himself. Will have a chance to speak on this as well, and then it'll go back to the board. So real quick presentation on this one. The property owner is Weston Wonder. It is located on Parcel A in Section 19 of Palestine Township, which is located on the west side of 510th Avenue, also known as County Road R38. Size of the parcel is approximately 3.5 acres. Its zoning is A1 agricultural, and it is assessed as a residential use as it does contain two single-family dwellings. The process here for the appeal of the director's decision, the Board of Adjustment shall hear and decide appeals where it is alleged that there is an error of law in any order, requirement, decision, or determination made by the planning and development director in the enforcement of this ordinance. Procedure more or less states that the appellant will have to file that appeal within 30 days from the decision. And that pretty much covers, I think, that area. I won't go into the rest of it. Again, that was included within the staff report, but it's just kind of some general information. So going over the findings of facts that we have included with the report on this one, there are two single-family dwellings located in the property and seven accessory structures. The two single-family dwellings were both built in, the first one being built in year 1888, second one being built in year 1935. Story County did not adopt zoning until 1958, and at which point the subject property was located in the A1 zoning district. At the time that we did create zoning in Story County back in 1958, The common rule was that you could only have one single-family dwelling on a parcel of land. Kind of going back to the church issue, the reason there's two on this one is because they were both put on there before we had zoning in the county. Those became legally established use, or legally established non-conforming uses. On August 15th, 2005, there was a plot of survey that was submitted to Story County. Leanne Harder at that time, the director, made the following comment on that plot of survey when we did have the chance to review it through the recorder's office. She stated that the division creates non-conforming lots with two homes. However, if the property owner would be engaged in farming, the houses would be exempt from this regulation through the agricultural exemption granted by state code. She went on to say that a future property owner would not be engaged in farming and the exemption would not apply. The non-conforming status would limit the property owner's ability to build or change any structures on the parcel. Again, the subject property was created with that plot of survey. It did split the subject property off of the southeast quarter of the northeast quarter, which was recorded in the office of the Story County Recorder on August 24th of 2005. This was effectively the date that that parcel was created. Furthermore, that parcel then was transferred from Don and Kathleen Rimsby. Not sure if I'm saying that right, but it was transferred from those individuals to Weston and Shannon Wonder on November 29th of 2005. On April 8th, 2011, there was a notice of violation that was issued to the property owner for an unpermitted use taking place on the subject property. At that time, evidence did show that a landscaping business known as Landscape by Design was being conducted on the property. The code enforcement officer at that time did note that a drive-by on the property showed many cars parked on the site, and according to the business's website, the business specialized in landscaping, prairie establishment, and restoration. Landscape lighting, mowing and maintenance, and snow and ice removal, and that business was located on the subject property. On May 2nd of last year, the appellant did apply for a conceptual review meeting with the interagency review team for a proposed conditional use permit for a nursery greenhouse. This was kind of step one in fixing the violation at that time last year. On June 2nd, the appellant did apply for a conditional use permit for a nursery and greenhouse. And on August 3rd of last year, the Story County Board of Adjustment did approve the conditional use permit for the nursery greenhouse on the subject property, subject to the three conditions that are listed on the screen here above. One of them, the third one, did state that an agricultural exemption application shall be applied for by the property owner in order for the second dwelling to remain on the property. It did say after that, our steps shall be taken by the existing property owner to bring the property into conformance in regards to the two single-family dwellings within 12 months of the issuance of the conditional use permit. I don't know how familiar the board is, but again, this one was a case that you did review last year, so hopefully there's some familiarity with it. Moving on then, on May 23rd of this year, the appellant did apply for a certificate of agricultural exemption for the seven accessory buildings and the two single-family dwellings located on the property. And as you can see up there, those are the following case numbers that were applied or were assigned to each one of the actual buildings on the property. After review of that application, it was determined by both Director Leanne Harder and myself that the application must be denied due to the fact that the application material submitted did state that all the buildings would be used in association with the approved conditional use permit from CUP 0211 that was approved by the Board of Adjustment last year for that nursery and greenhouse. Subsequently, we did send a letter to the applicant on May 29th outlining the reasons for that denial. Then on June 4th, the appellant did file appeal of the decision to deny that certificate of agricultural exemption for the seven accessory buildings and the two single-family dwellings on the property. Last one just kind of shows you the legal notifications that were mailed out and published in the paper regarding this hearing. Going back to the actual director's decision, then on May 23rd, again, the appellant did apply for the certificate of agricultural exemption on those structures. As we had stated after review, the main reason that this one was denied because the applicant did state that all those buildings were used for the business that was taking place in the property, which was approved through the conditional use permit by the Board of Adjustment last year. We did want to note that with the farms exempt language that is granted by the Code of Iowa in Section 335.2, in part, that does state, except to the extent required to implement Section 335.27, no ordinance adopted under this chapter applies to land, farmhouses, farm barns, farm outbuildings, or other buildings or structures which are primarily adapted by reason of nature and area for use for agricultural purposes while still used. So again, our determination was because the landscaping business on the property, we did not consider that particular business to be an agricultural use. So with that, your alternatives on the appeal are listed on the screen above. And if there are any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Reasonably.
I think, at least in my opinion, and I would imagine this opinion would carry through Leanne as well too, a nursery in some sense may be, especially if you're getting into the growing of plants, landscaping plants, trees and stuff like that. I don't think we're necessarily seeing that on this property. And again, based off the approved conditional use permit and everything that we were able to gather from those discussions last year, I don't see that happening. I looked through their website again today, and it just seems that it's more, the business is more on the actual landscaping side, the snow removal, the mowing, and stuff like that. And I don't think it really fits into what we view as agricultural here at Story County, so. Well, I mean, I think the critical thing, and we'll go back to kind of the discussion I think we had last year on this application, were those two houses on the property, and at the time the Board of Adjustment had really viewed that obviously as a legally established non-conforming use, and all technicality until those that use was considered conforming again, taking action on the conditional use permit might have been a little bit premature because of that. However, you did approve it with the timeline that they needed to take care of it within a year. So I think just based off everything that was talked about last year, I think that's kind of the main reason for this going forward is so they can continue to have those two houses on the property.
Listening to you, Charlie, to bring this into conformity, they have to take down one of the houses. Is that correct?
Well, there's other options as well. I mean, like I said, we only allow for one house on a lot parcel tract of land. So another option would be possibly subdividing land, putting one house on, more or less creating two lots out of that parcel on there. We recently adopted what we call the residential parcel subdivision, which I think would fit into their particular scenario pretty well. That would allow more or less for those two houses to split off on their own parcels of land. Now when you get into surveying and stuff like that, I think there's obviously a cost associated with that. There's an application process with Story County, but even more so the surveying cost sometimes can be pretty expensive. So if it was just the one house or if it was just the one parcel, yeah, something would have to take place. If they're not interested in having the two parcels of land again, we only allow for the one house per parcel, so yeah, that would be a problem. But again, I think there's other remedies for it as well.
As long as everybody accepts the definition that this is a non-agricultural business, there really is no way under the processes, there's no procedures that could be changed here or anything that would make this able to be happen. That
as far as the agricultural exemption, yeah, again, I mean, we issue the agricultural exemption. I think the main reason we do it is so we can actually put a certificate. We record that certificate, and our hopes are that it goes with any title search that will come up on the property. I think one of our biggest fears is if somebody builds a house under the agricultural exemption, say they're fully involved in farming, one of the biggest concerns will be is if 5 years down the road they go to sell that house and they sell it to somebody who is not engaged in farming, at that point, it's no longer an agricultural use and could become non-conforming. So we try to put that certificate on those uses so any future owner will know that. So again, that's kind of why we have that process. Also, we have that process to at least track, you know, so if we see things going on, we at least know, okay, well, this is considered an agricultural use. This one actually has a zoning permit. It's not considered an agricultural use. So more or less, again, with the agricultural exemption, it would give them immunity from the zoning regulations. They could have as many houses technically on the property as they wanted. But again, with this particular one, staff, we don't see that those houses are involved in agriculture. At least the residents of those houses. I believe so, and I'm going back again to the conditional use permit from last year. I believe the property owner lives in one of them, and I think they rent the other one out.
So this is the first appeal, I think, that the board's been involved in. I'd like to go back to the appeal process and the obligations on the applicant in the case of the appeal.
You're talking the procedure on that one? And so such appeal shall be filed with the director with notice of the appeal specifying the grounds thereof, the filing fee, and any additional submittal requirements. When notice of the appeal is filed, the director shall transmit all the records regarding the appeal, which was the application that you received, to the Board of Adjustment and place the appeal on the next scheduled meeting of the Board of Adjustment. So with this, I mean, it almost kind of sets up as a quasi-judicial process where, you know, I would say that we're almost the defendants defending our decision. The appellant's going to be arguing, obviously, against our decision, and at that point, it's up to the Board of Adjustment to either uphold the decision or reverse the decision.
I guess that part, you know, I want to make sure that we follow this. I mean, you're right. You're in a semi-judicial mode. This letter of June 4th, is that appeal, right?
Yes.
I have a farmer's house. At what point in time, where in this letter do I see that the grounds are specified for the reason for the appeal?
To be quite honest, I'm not so sure I even read the specific letter. I mean, my main focus when we went through this process was, again, just to defend the decision that we made.
I would expect,
and I think again,
I'm taking issue with A or B.
Yeah, and again, this process itself for them to come here this evening and speak on their behalf, I think that will kind of reiterate their point, hopefully. But
any understanding where the appellant thinks that you went wrong with this decision?
All I have here is this letter, so I guess I would stress just to offer them their chance to speak here this evening, and hopefully the board will be able to gather it there.
Questions for staff? Who would speak for the applicant or the appealing party at this point? Okay.
Hi, my name is Weston Wonder. I'm the property owner and the owner of the majority shareholder, anyways, of Landscapes by Design. I think Howard is going to, you're going to pass out the handout? Okay. I'll just give you a brief background, kind of, I guess, how we got to this point. You know, it's been covered to a certain degree. I relocated my business from Ames. I had an office on Lincoln Way when I first started in 2003. And we service both markets, the Des Moines and the Ames market. So we wanted to be at kind of a halfway point. So, and we were growing at that time. So we wanted to find something else that would possibly work. We decided to purchase the acreage from Don. It was a nice location on a paved road. And had a good layout of existing farm buildings that would work well for us. If you look at the map that is enclosed there, that's basically just a CAD drawing that we put together that kind of shows where things are. The two residences are up by the road, obviously 510th. All the other existing buildings have not been changed or altered in any you know, way, shape, or form. Let me take that back. We did change the main building in the back. We finished it, but we didn't change the footprint of it. The two grain bins, the original corn crib from the farm, and then the functioning grain bin that Don still uses, and Don can speak to that. He's here tonight. When we purchased the property from Don in November of, I think, 2005, that was part of our purchase agreement, was to give Don a permanent easement to the bins for grain storage and access across our lawn and across the driveway for him to get tillage equipment, combines in and out. And that's happened every year since we sold the property. As far as equipment and materials, yes, the other buildings are primarily servicing the landscape business. I'll let Howard and a few of the other people we have here tonight go speak to some of the other things. But if you do look at, there's some photos attached there. We have basically, I wish I had some before pictures of what things look like. Don did a nice job of keeping things up, but we have definitely enhanced the property. It's well maintained. We use it as a display for our customers. The lawn is manicured. There's almost 2,000 square foot of brick that's been installed. We've updated the house. We've put probably close to $20,000 in the small house that is kind of an issue right now, just in terms of updating and making it where it needs to be. So you can kind of flip through and see some of the photos there. And Saf is correct. I do live in the two-story with my family. And then we rent the other house to a team member who helps us with snow. Occasionally he does have another job as well, but he does help us with snow removal. So anyway, that's kind of the background. The original house was built in 1888, and the other one's been there since 1935, so that's also correct. But I guess with that, I'm going to let Howard, who's kind of been helping me with this, it's a long process that I'm not that familiar with, and I do have to run a business too, so I've had Howard help me through a lot of this, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
I'm Howard Hammond, a resident of Slater and a friend and patriot of Weston's. We're both in the Slater Business Association, and as he remarked, he's busy with his activity, and not that I don't have anything to do, but I think he thought I was a little bit familiar with what we're into here, so I was willing to put together some facts and information. And if you don't mind, I guess you want me to keep talking in this, so I better... Well, would you? Thank you, Weston. To expedite things for you, as has been indicated, we were here some months ago, and if you will permit me, I'll give you a quick review of why we got where we are and how we got to this situation. And Charles did a pretty good job of giving you the outline of where we were. So on the front page here, I'll just briefly hit these items, and I would say for myself and the others, will give a little information. We're ready to be interrupted if you have a question at any time. We're providing just detail here. But in that, what happened when Weston first received his notice, he kind of got right on it, back to the staff, his notice of violation, and the second item there then prepared the conceptual review and the attachments and the fees and things that were needed. And after he did that, we were advised with the staff, and we met then with the interagency review team, and each of those offices of the county were represented. And their staff report provided us a copy and the zoning commission a copy, indicated there was little to no comment by all those offices as regards a problem as far as they were concerned. And any that were, we rectified. Then we went on, excuse me, and from there prepared the development and conditional use permit applications and provided that to the planning and zoning staff, and then followed through to meet with them. In this situation, then, the Planning and Zoning Commission, from their activity, recommended the conditional use permit to your board, and in my language, with conditions. And there's a problem. We've already cited that, two houses. So on there, maybe this is too brief, but Board of Adjustment, you folks in previous assembly say, okay, but you better go back here and deal with rectifying this condition. So, I believe I'm correct. Of the four people here tonight, Ms. Silmar would be the only person not having heard some of this before, because I think you were present. So, so then, obviously, the staff, as you've heard, recommended denial of that ag exemption certificate. So that's why we're here where we are. I would say to you that as we received the information from the staff on the denial, we went back through all the data that we had exchanged through all the process and submitted to historic preservation here so we could go back to any of it that we needed to. And I can cite a letter that came from the offices as recent as last 2 days of May, and they said to us, you've got to prove to the board that there's a reason for your being present. What happened was, for us in our review of events, when Weston first received the violation, a copy of that violation is on your page 2. What we'd like to point out, what I'm doing here is I'm moving to the direction to justify why we're here appealing. Okay. As you see, we've highlighted the description of violation indicated to us at that time. Non-permitted business. Okay. So we said, huh, this should not be a pushover, but what other business can you think of that's any more closely related to agriculture than nursery landscaping? It's not a factory for tiddlywinks or other things. It's off in the blue. So we said we need to take a look at this. And then, so the staff just recently said they got three options. One was you need to move a house, or two, you need to subdivide. And we looked through that because we would not have been able to do that until July 1 of this year, because the Board of Supervisors just approved that particular possibility. And so it turns out that moving to the house, or as Charles indicated, going into surveyor operation, this didn't seem the way to go here, because as Weston just explained, those two houses are part of the reason that he settled there. It was possible for him to have one driveway in, no chance of somebody thievery, because his family's living and an employee living. What better arrangement if the family goes than the employee looks after? So we're saying, really, if you had the money banked up, Weston, why would you want to move a house off or subdivide? If you subdivide, the minimum subdivision is an acre. That would take in some of the buildings that he uses for equipment in the nursery business. So it just didn't seem logical. So the letter to Weston from the staff said, these are your options. Move it, subdivide it, or appeal. So then the language said, but if you're going to appeal, quote, this is Charles' letter to Weston. I'm sorry I didn't give you a copy, but this is the middle of four paragraphs. If you do wish to appeal to the Board of Adjustment, information regarding the process is enclosed, and such an appeal will need to demonstrate an administrative error on the part of staff in the action to deny the request. So what would we to do? We went back in history and said, where did the staff make a mistake? That's the only thing we got to hang our hat on. Not you know, coming down heavily on the staff, because they've been cooperative through the process, but where did they make an error? Here's where they made the error on that notice. when we went into it, we said all we have to do is prove that, and again, I repeat myself, that it's an agriculture-related business. So if we get over that hurdle, home free. Little did we realize that when we got the notice, following the notice of violation, and the staff says you got to go to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Well, in that preparation, a letter came along from the staff, and it said what you see on your third page. If you don't mind, I'll read for you. At that time, a staff person wrote me this email as we communicated. I want you, excuse me for reading for you, be sure I have the right understanding. I want you to be aware of one of the recommendation conditions we put in the staff report. After review of your conditional use permit, it seems the second house on the property is not being used for farm-related purposes. Notice, after the conditional use permit application goes to the commission, we're already on second base, figuring that all we have to do is prove one state, and then the second paragraph says, I wanted to put this in the staff report to make you aware of it. Fair game. This would be a separate case, and technically the property is currently in violation of the two houses, and a conditional use permit should not be issued. Well, it was issued. So I highlighted in a separate case, we received no violation that says you got two houses there. So we're kind of hanging a hat on a small item, but we think it's sufficient to say that going into the game and into the case, we were put at a little disadvantage. It may seem to be a minor error in our minds or yours, but we think it's sufficient to justify this appeal. And it's worthy of your time and our time to kind of work it through. So I guess we're hanging our hat on the fact that instead of Sheena's words, this would be a separate case, and technically, we would hope that you'd see this practically through to closure, that Mr. Wunder could continue with his 20 employees in our business area at Slater, and see to it that we were at a little disadvantage here, but clinging on to maybe a minor error with the staff seems to be the only thing we could do, and Charles, in his comments, pointed out the technicality situation. So, I guess maybe I got dry mouth, so I've talked long enough. And maybe to reinforce this a little bit, if you don't mind, we have a couple of gentlemen whose name has been mentioned, and so they have interest in this. And so, if you'd permit their observations just briefly, and then I'll provide a closure. If you don't mind.
Out of order at this point in time. If they want to speak as part of the public, that would be fine. If you want to choose, we allowed you to come up to help Mr. Warner, which is fine.
Huh?
But as we're dealing with the public, that's a separate section. So if you want to close your comments
at
this point in time, that's fine. You will still have a chance for closing.
They can speak, and then I would...
During the public section.
Oh, okay. And then I'll come back to closure. Okay.
Yeah, okay, before you leave, though, because this would be a point in time for us to ask any specific questions.
Of Western or myself?
It would seem to me that you're making the biggest issue out of this as to whether this is or is not an ag-related business. Is that correct or not?
Say it again?
What I was hearing you say is that your case is based upon this notice of violation and the fact that it says it's a non-permitted business use and that you consider their business to be an ag business. Is that correct or not? Okay, then state for me what your...
We're suggesting if the nursery landscape business is a conditional use that you can permit. The planning and zoning saw fit to say to you, board assembled, conditional use seems sufficient to grant the conditional use. I guess the hang-up to not fault heavily the staff was that going into things, we didn't know. Seemingly, we got by the it's a conditional use okay. We haven't gotten by two houses. We got A and B. We got to satisfy both situations.
Other questions?
I think it'd be helpful, Charlie, if somewhere we could see, and maybe this is the wrong time, just the conditions that were put on that conditional use permit, if we can be reminded of that. That might help us understand.
I think we will have to during deliberation. There's no question about that. Yeah.
Okay. That might hold back.
I guess, I mean, I've got a use problem here, even by the definitions of what we have in here. We have approved a conditional use permit for a nursery greenhouse. I'm not seeing a nursery and I'm not seeing a greenhouse. Either one. I'm seeing a landscape business with machinery, equipment, and other stuff like that. I'm not seeing a production facility in any of the pictures that I have seen.
Historically, we've been a little bit generous with the definition of a nursery and greenhouse to include landscaping businesses. If you'll recall, about similar in times that you acted on this one, there was one, Charlie, on the County Line Road, did they do a conditional use permit or rezone?
No.
There was a conditional use permit on County Line, Boone County, Story County Line Road for a similar type of situation. And I'm going to read definition of nursery for you real quick, too. No. That was north on, that one's north on G.W. Carver. But we have a few of them in the county that we don't have a definition of landscaping business. A nursery is land or greenhouses used for the limited sale of flowers, plants, shrubs, trees, and vegetables. With the shrubs and trees in that definition, I mean, again, we've been very generous with that definition. Otherwise, they would just not be permitted at all in the A1 zone district.
Patent one look, I think, before we begin to evaluate that further. That's really a matter for the deliberation phase of this at this point. Okay, then we'll close that part and we would ask for comments from the public. I assume we have some this evening. If we do, would you come forward and state your name and
good evening. My name is Don Remesey, and I was the previous owner of the property that we're talking about. I grew up there. My parents lived there, and I'm very familiar with it. I am still farming the remainder of the 160 acres, which is about 153 acres that surrounds that property. Weston and I have a very good relationship, and I have full free and clear access anytime I want. If I want to access my fields in that area of his property, I'm more than welcome, no problem. There's also a grain bin there that at the time of the sale, I knew that I wanted to continue using. It happens to be a drying bin, and I wanted to continued to have access to that bin. So Weston granted an easement for that. So as long as I want to use that bin, I may do so. So I just have to add on a personal note that Weston and Shanna have done a wonderful job of keeping the property up. It's not an eyesore like so many acreages you see around the country. It's a real plus for the Slater community, and any words that I can say to encourage you to grant this, I can't say it strong enough, because Weston is a good community member, and the place is a real asset to the area. So unless you have a question for me, that would be about all I have. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kenneth May, and I'm a resident of Slater. On the City Council Slater, and have been a past president of the Slater Business Association, and can't say enough for what Weston's done for our community. On a City Council, and I can tell you how frustrated I get with some of the regulations and details and all of that, and this goes beyond that. I think I can judge that some of you would like to see how we can make this work. And I would really appeal to the common sense of why we're all here. To follow these rules, this process, and I was here for the appeal a year ago, just seems like a moving target. First, it didn't comply with an A1 zoning. Then the next thing they come back with is, well, now there's two houses on there, and now you've got to find a way to get around that. And you can move a house off there, but the house was there before Story County ever heard or thought of zoning any property in this county. The whole thing seems absurd to me. This is a man that brought 20 employees to our area. He's within the he's within the 2-mile radius of Slater. He fits with our comprehensive plan. He's brought business to the area. He volunteers the services of his company in the youth of our town every year. I'm looking for a way to make this work, and I hope you can do the same. If it all comes down to technicalities, that's still being used for agricultural purposes when Don goes there and stores grain in that grain bin. You're going to find, I think Weston can probably name you some other landscaping businesses in this county that have been granted those exemptions, agricultural exemptions that don't grow a thing on them. I thought I heard your staff member say that in the past they'd been generous with that. I don't understand why we need to tighten that up. This isn't somebody this is not a hair cutting business. If I came to a zoning board with a landscaping company, what zoning are you going to put that in? Seems to me you'd put that in an ag zoning. Again, I'm talking to you. I haven't looked up rules. I didn't spend the day in the computer trying to find something. I would appeal to you to find a way to leave employment in this county and not chase him to Polk County to move his business and his employees down there that are benefiting our city. There was supposed to be a city staff member here tonight that had other commitments. There was a letter, I think, with her to be delivered from our mayor asking you to also to comply with this. This use. I'm going to quit before I say something I wish I had.
Time for closing comments.
Obviously, the decision is going to be up to you guys. This is my first shot at this. It was my first shot at running a business when I lost my job. and I built this thing, tied all this together, I built this thing from nothing to $2 million in 10 years. And I put everything I have in a property. Everything. And if I have to sell, I've probably got $200,000 in that office and in the display. I have a conference room in there. I have 1,200 square foot of office. I've got $50,000 in brick around the house. You know, it's, I will have to start all and yes, I could have done some things better. I could have followed some rules and had my thing, had some stuff together that I didn't. Okay, but I was 23 and I didn't have a job and I had a family. So I started a business and I grew it to a large scale and I have everything in this damn thing. And if I have to move, I'll probably sell. Because I'm not going to go through it again. It's too freaking hard work. I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. If anybody's ever built a business from nothing to that, it's hard. I mean, it's... I wish I could hold it together better, but I'm struggling. A few of the other comments that I guess I would like to respond to is that you're correct. We don't grow. I don't grow production there. Is that in our long-term plan? Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I want, I mean, I don't know that Don's going to sell me enough property to have a tree farm there. Is that something that I thought about? Sure. We recently hired a horticulture grad from Iowa State that wants to run a nursery. But I can't build a retail building and sell retail plant material out of there until I get this done. And so that's part of our business plan. That's part of our 5-year plan. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do retail traffic. I'm a designer and I'm a construction guy. She's a plant person. So that's why we...
I don't understand what your company does, and you're the best person to ask. Yeah. So I want you to tell me what your company does.
Okay. Well, we do landscape design, we do maintenance, we install plant material, we do prairie restoration, I do ongoing estate maintenance. My first client has a 20-acre estate that we maintain on a weekly basis. He's still a client. I'm not going to try to BS you. I don't grow plant material there. I bring it in, we stock it, we have some things there, but without a sign, we don't try to generate retail traffic. You know, that would be something I would like to do, but I can't put a small nursery retail office in and sell plant material until we get past this step. So we do maintenance. So once we get a project completed, you know, we might go in and build a patio, build a deck, put in the lighting, put in, you know, mulch the plant material. We'll go back and continually maintain that property. So some clients have us come on a monthly basis. Some have us come on a weekly basis. Some have us come 2 or 3 times a year. It kind of depends on the client, really. So we design, build, and maintain. That's about as short and as concise as I can say it. We do decks. We do prairie maintenance, so we do prairie restoration. I've done a lot of work for... we do rain gardens. I've done a lot of work for City of Ames, for Center and Associates, City of Ankeny. We're one of the only companies that does native restoration. That's kind of where my interest has always been. So, I guess with that, that's really all I have to say. It's kind of a big night for me. So take your time, and I hope we make a good decision. So, Howard, is there anything that you want to add?
No, this is closing statements right
okay.
now.
I'll finish it. Okay, go ahead.
All right. I don't want to drag us on, but we did reflect earlier, and we haven't brought it up at all, and maybe it's not even pertinent. Well, our thoughts were way back, a ways. What happened in November of 2005 when he purchased? certainly there was paperwork that came through the county because the P&Z staff was here, the county was here, we were in places we are today. Why didn't somebody then say, you got two houses and you got a plot here, 3.5 acres, you can't do that? Because right then somebody recognized that it was not a farming operation because the regulations now say you can't have the second residence unless it is a party to the operation. You understand? So we're not going there because it's, but it was an issue that we thought, well, maybe we should hang our hat on that. So for whatever it means, I blurb it, maybe confuse things. But maybe in conclusion, I'd like to say, Weston's made his appeal. I guess we've all said what needs to be said. You don't often have appeals like this. Probably a little bit out of step. But I'm not trying to gloss it, but I'm trying to tell Leanne and Charlie and Kristen that, and tell you that through the whole process, we had to hang our hat on something here, a little violation, and they were in error. But the emails have been good. Correspondence has been good. Whenever I called the office, they responded. And that's their job, to deal with the land use plan of this county and reinforce it. So in the light of their mind, they think they're doing the right thing to do based on the specific language, the technicalities that are there. So that's why you're seated. It's kind of an appellate operation to say, well, close enough for us to let this happen for, and how many more times we're going to have it, we don't know. We don't want that to come back and haunt us, but at the same time, we're not setting a precedent here dealing with cases like this individually that we can't get the job done. So, with that, thank you.
With that, we will close the case and commence with deliberations. Leanne, I really have one little primary question. And it really comes up with the conditions. I don't remember all of the specifics at that point in time. Obviously, we were dealing with a conditional use permit, which was literally for use. It wasn't for construction or anything else like that. I'd like to hear from you or from staff. That item 3, did that create a untenable? Was that reasonable at the time, or was that something that could never have been accomplished regardless?
The way that's worded, I think there are mechanisms that could be accomplished. We always, in cases like this, not always, but we do say that ag exemption is an option to go. It doesn't cost anything to apply for an ag exemption, and given the number of structures on this property. Actually, hearing Mr. Wonder, a couple of grain bins, we may have to go back and reverse. I mean, I'll be honest, hearing that they are being used for agricultural purposes, I would say a couple of those grain bins we may issue an ag exemption on. But the way that condition is worded, there are other options, and they are presented to the board as well. I'm looking at the decision and order. I left and went and got the recorded decision and order. There's always an option to request a variance to allow two houses on one parcel. Again, if the houses are both being, and all the structures are being used for the conditional use permit, and then the conditional use permit to include all those structures within that, and that may be done administratively. It may be done as a modification that comes before the Board of Adjustment. And again, Charlie mentioned the residential parcel subdivision process. That's a subdivision that it just goes right to the Board of Supervisors. It was this case and a couple others that really brought that as a solution to light. And staff brought it to the Board of Supervisors as a recommendation to incorporate. So, no, I don't. Was it untenable? I don't think so.
I'm a little uncomfortable from the standpoint that we obviously acted knowing that it was going to be a nursery, and yet the violation is there is because it was not an ag-related business.
A nursery is not an agricultural business, according to our ordinance. We have case law a nursery, according to our ordinance, includes that retail sales on site.
Talk about seven separate agriculture exemptions. I mean, is it possible to view it as, well, the majority of it or a good portion of it is being used for an agricultural use and sort of approve it in the aggregate as opposed to, I mean, to me,
it makes sense to do on a structure by structure basis when you think that ultimately it comes down to whether or not they are conforming or non-conforming structure with our regulations, and we need to have something that has a way for us to go forward if that structure were ever to be removed or damaged. And that's quite honestly why we do these rather than on a parcel basis. They're on a structure by structure basis.
I have a question here. What is our, okay, this is coming as an appeal to us. So what are our actions and what are, you know, we have a couple different issues. We've talked about a couple different things. From our position as the board, on an appeal basis, our options, we turn this back to you on your this original decision. Do we amend what's going on in the past? You know, what is our, what's our true mission here on this thing right now?
Section 13.20 says you shall hear and decide appeals where it is alleged that there is an error of law in any order, requirement, decision, determination made by the Planning and Development Director in enforcement of the ordinance. The decision specifically before you this evening is our denial of the agricultural exemption requests. And you are now determining whether that denial, that action we as staff took to deny those requests, was an error. And you can quite simply say, yes, staff, that was an error, and we outright grant those agricultural exemptions, or we uphold your decision and they're not agriculturally exempt.
You were not aware at the time that the grain bins were being used for agricultural purposes?
I don't think I was, but I didn't, you know. I think
that's
the
my
way,
question.
And how did we...
Well, the application that was submitted said that all the buildings that they listed on that site plan, which I think was the 7 buildings, were being used for the business. So, if not that, our assumption was that they were being used for the business. So, and one thing I just wanted to add to what Leanne was saying, too, and I kind of feel that the whole discussion here is kind of getting to the point where if the denial of this means that the business can't continue, and I don't think that's the case at all. The conditional use permit that the Board of Adjustment, that you granted last year allows for this business to take place. And as far as we're concerned, the business itself is in conformance now. We're okay with the business continuing. And I think that the agricultural exemption is based off that last condition on there that states that those two houses, since they're considered a non-conforming use since that property was split, the real issue here is how do we allow for those two houses to continue? And my feeling is that the agricultural exemption was an attempt by the property owner to continue to allow those two houses on the same property. We as staff are arguing that those two houses, we don't see them being in agricultural use. And again, the other buildings, when we issued the conditional use permit, I think the other buildings were brought into conformance with the business that was going on. And again, the business can continue. We're not trying to stop the business at all. We're trying to figure out how to allow these two houses to continue and what to do with these two houses. I think that's the main issue that we should be reviewing here. So, again,
I agree with you, I guess, but I mean, I see where Steve is going, and I tend to be sympathetic to where he's going, and that was part of why I was investigating number three to go back into that. That if number three had not been put in the condition in August of 2011, would we be here this evening?
I'll answer that. I think we would, not necessarily here. I don't know where we would be, although I do know what steps we would have taken as staff would be to issue a notice of violation specifically for two houses on one parcel. And we didn't simply because it was addressed through the conditions. Looking back, we probably, that would have been an appropriate thing for us to do. But we knew it had been addressed and the applicant was aware that that was not allowed according to the code, but had that not been in there, I think that would have been the next step we would have taken, because that we can't ignore that is a violation, having two houses on one. And as they're brought to our attention, then we issue the notice of violations.
Right.
and to be back here in front of you guys with the hardship with that, why it should be allowed two houses on one property. That's definitely, and that was in the decision order that you all acted upon last August.
But if we uphold your decision, the applicant has the ability to file for a variance, and it very well will probably end up back here, but he has that action open to him still, correct?
But any action you take today doesn't, the action today is you're just acting on either upholding or striking down our action to deny that agricultural exemptions. It's very specifically tied to that, those applications for agricultural exemptions.
What if, for instance, we were troubled by the decision in light of some comments about a couple of the buildings here, and we said, well, maybe we were supportive of part of your decision, but part of your decision we think should be reconsidered. Would that then buy the applicant a little bit of time in terms of making application for a variance?
When it comes to appeals, because they're not done very often, I have to go back to the ordinance each and every time. What? Had to come up.
We're under the portion of deliberation at this point in time. If we call on you, believe me, I understand your frustrations, and I'd like you to understand ours in that we are allowed very narrow latitude. We're not allowed to go back to this. In this appeal process, the only thing we can decide, we can't interpret, we can't change. That's all that we have today. It does not mean that there are not other future options, but this board can't do what the planning and zoning can. We can't do some of those things that are more interpretive. By the time it comes to us, we are allowed to only apply very restrictive criteria and often find ourselves bound further than we would like as well.
And as my question asks, we know full well that if we go that direction, you very well may be back in front of us, but then we'll have that issue to deal with. And we're only limited with what we can do right now. And I understand what you're saying. I understand your frustrations. I think we're looking for a way that we can get this done and still stay within the law.
Ken?
My frustration is this variance issue never came up to the best of my knowledge in the past year. So that would have been a great option to know about.
Yeah. When we approved the conditional use permit, that was to allow him to have the business that he has, right? Why did he have to come back and get the agricultural exemption if the business was already approved?
Technically, if you want to go to, you should not have ever acted to approve the conditional use permit because the property was in violation for having two houses.
That was never addressed when we approved the conditional use. There was no mention then, was there, of the two houses?
Yeah. It's in the staff board. It's in your written decision and order. I didn't go back and pull the minutes. We can do that.
Board must address it because you had condition three, right? I mean, it was an issue then, no doubt about it.
But going back to your question of timing, we have a section on stay of proceedings, and that's really if construction is imminent, which we don't have that case. There are no improvements being planned on the property at times. I don't know that they've met the 30-day time period to file the appeal. The ordinance does not say anything that you have to act in a certain time frame on the appeal that I can find or I quite honestly recall.
The applicant to withdraw his appeal to file a variance, file a request for a variance.
In order to hear you on this particular one, would you please come up and make sure this is part of the record so we can...
The point of order I would ask is tabling this decision an option for this proceeding. Logistically, that would allow for a variance to be filed in the meantime, and both of these could then be decided at the same time at the next meeting. Is tabling an option for them to do tonight?
It is, and I might be reading into Vicky's comments, but I think maybe what you're getting at with the question being withdrawn so that, in essence, they wouldn't have to pay the application fee again. And that's what because if they just table it,
I think
they have to pay the application fee again, too. And that's, I think it's the exact, I don't have that material in front of me, I think it's the same as what you applied for the appeal.
Would the variance be a possibility, though, with the two houses, if there's not enough property for that house to be sitting on alone?
Well, and that's one thing I wanted to add real quick, too. And, I mean, I think the Board of Adjustment is well aware of the variance, too. You've got to prove the hardship to get the variance. I mean, just applying for the variance itself doesn't mean that the variance will be granted. And that's another thing to consider is they're going to have to prove that there's a hardship in place that they need to have that second house to continue on the property. I'm thinking ahead right now in a staff report that we'd write. I don't think any way we could necessarily see it. I could be wrong. I can't think of a way that we would determine that. And, you know, I'm going to go back to that residential parcel subdivision thing that we have in place right now. And to me, that's almost a for sure thing right now. I would think if they would do that, I don't see any way that, you know, we'd approve the subdivision plot, I would assume. Leanne, you can speak to that because I know you wrote most of that code, but I think it really fits in well with what they need to get done here. Again, I know it's a little bit more expensive than applying for the variance, but, you know, being the Board of Adjustment, you know what it takes to grant a variance, and, you know, think ahead. I don't know if that would necessarily even be granted. But, again, that's ultimately up to you, too, so...
On just this application, what we're asked to do tonight, based on the comments and evidence that we have, I'm uncomfortable with the denial of the agricultural exemption as to a few of these buildings. I don't know which ones, but at least a couple of them. It sounds to me like the decision was probably appropriate as it relates to some other buildings. And so I'm uncomfortable saying the appeal should be granted, and I mean in total, and I'm comfortable saying that it should be denied in total. And so I'm kind of in the middle.
Well, I'm laying in the middle, too, because I can see... I'm not sure I agree with Charlie. I think the house, if there is an employee living in it, and if the amount of land that goes when you separate it is difficult to get done, that could very well be fall within the hardship range. So I'm a little like Vicky in that I'm feeling that they should probably withdraw this and come back at us with a variance, is my feeling. And we solve the issue.
But
we really don't have enough.
But that doesn't solve that.
I'll ask this as staff. I can't sit here and tell you exactly which numbers go with which structure without having to go downstairs and look at. Are they?
But they are.
But
even if we determine that
right.
two of those structures were agricultural exemption, it doesn't really change the outcomes, does it?
No. As Charlie pointed out, the main concern are those houses.
Another case we had, Leanne, in a violation, we discussed there was a fine involved for the violation. Is that an option?
Can't answer that right now. I'd have to confer with the county attorney's office.
That's what I've heard about the appeal process. I don't think so. I don't think you're really allowed. It's a pretty narrow appeal.
Well, I realize
that. I think you're saying that would be part of a variance process.
Part of the variance process. That answered my question.
Even with that, I think it's questionable. We would definitely have to seek legal advice on that one.
At the property in 2005, would any red flags have gone up in the recorder's office or in the auditor's office indicating the two houses on the property? Okay. But nothing was followed up with as far as that went?
My understanding is the recorder's office will record any splits as long as it is it can be divided through a plat of survey, even if we offer comments. And our comments are then forwarded on to the surveyor. Our department doesn't have a way to stop the filing of a division, though.
Identified the issue a long, long time ago, before this parcel was split, at least that it was an issue back in 2005. It looks like the transfer occurred, 3 months afterwards, 4 months afterwards? Yeah.
And Lynn, to answer your question, when the transfers come in, our department does not see transfers. Nope, we don't.
I will move that we adopt at least the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment.
Second. We've got a motion from Gilmar, a second from McGill to adopt the findings of fact in the staff report prepared and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustments. Roll.
Gilmar.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Considering our limited options, I move we affirm the decision of the director in the case of APL, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding that no error of law was made by the Planning Board, Planning and Development Director in the enforcement of the Story County Land Development Regulations.
Okay, we've got a motion to affirm the decision of the director in case number APL 01-12 as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding that no error of law was made by the Planning and Zoning Development Director in the enforcement of the Story County Land Development Regulations. And open it up for any further discussion.
I'm willing to second the motion, but I'd also be willing to defer a final decision by tabling this and or partially deny the request. I tend to think that it wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing if we found out more about these ag buildings, and maybe that's one thing that we want to consider, which in the interim would give the applicant an opportunity to perhaps make decisions about applying for a variance and things like that. Doesn't seem to me to be bad, quite a bad idea.
Leanne, does a determination of partial agricultural exemption put this in something of a, this appeal still in something of a state of holding by the very nature of that?
It would seem to, because there's still by law a violation issue that we can't deal with.
Well, that's not really the question here tonight. It's whether we uphold the...
No, ours is very narrow, but I'm questioning that if we partially uphold the ruling, there still is, by the law, a violation there, which is still out there and would have to be processed in some manner, but it still leaves it, in my mind, to a certain extent, still open.
If you look at page 2 on the decision order or the staff report, it has that table. These are, it says request number and purpose. You could possibly amend the motion to uphold the decision for request numbers 25-12 through 19-12. Those are accessory buildings associated with the landscape business and then single family dwellings. And then reverse it for 18-12 and 17-12, which I do believe are the grain bin. So you're both upholding and reversing.
Process in any way, shape, or form, or at least stay part of the decision, or it's final as to that, and they still got a file list of the things that we uphold.
There's still the violation of two single family dwellings if you uphold them.
Applicant still has the right to file back for a variance, correct?
Correct. And then within 30 days of your action, too, any of the parties or a member of the public can appeal your decision onto the district court. So the applicant can, a member of the public can, even the planning development department can appeal your decision onto district court.
I'd like to see if there's a way that we can give him some additional time, maybe to meet with staff and think about some of the things that we've discussed tonight. It sounds like, at least from the comments that we've heard from the public, and this is what I would expect, that they feel like they've been treated fairly in terms of communication and things like that, and clearly the staff probably has an idea of the direction that we'd sort of like this to take, and I think that there might be a good benefit just to have some additional time to discuss.
I think, for what it's worth, I'd say a 60 to 90 day time frame rather than tabling to the next meeting, because that's actually right around the corner, because your meeting is delayed a week this month. Yeah, following Robert's rules, you would need to withdraw your motion. As did the maker of the second or the motion accept that.
Did I miss the motion to adopt the decision of legal principles?
We didn't do it with
okay.
The, yeah, it's different with this one.
Okay.
Went to discussion.
Okay.
So we have a motion on the table, but we did not go to a roll call at that point in time.
I move. I would like to withdraw my motion.
Second?
Yeah, you need to agree with, since
I
you seconded it.
we've got a motion from McGill and a second from Fehlmeyer to withdraw the motion that's currently on the table.
Vote on it.
Pardon?
You don't need to vote on it. If the maker of the motion withdraws the motion, you don't need to vote on it.
Well, in either case, and all in favor say aye.
Aye.
We want roll call. I want to make sure that we're on this page together. Do I have another motion then? To table.
I move we table this case number APL 01-12 for 90 days.
I ask a question. Weston, is November a quiet time? Is October a really busy time for you? The month of October? Can I ask that you table it till the December Board of Adjustment meeting? Just knowing what... As staff, we know the violations there.
I will...
You need to come up here, though.
The thing that for me is getting tough is it's drawing out so long that I can't plan, I can't construct a sign. Like, for me, I have a opportunity for a really soft market right now with some competitors gone.
Construct a sign. You just need to get...
I can do that before this happens?
Sign permit. Oh, yeah, that's...
That can happen.
As long as
you
requirement.
Submit a sign permit. That's one of the conditions of the conditional use permit.
That's it. Okay, then I'm cool with November.
Mr. Warner, I think you're hearing from this board... We want to give you options, okay? And no one's trying to run this down the line. As the Board of Adjustments, what we've been given here is very narrow, and we're not allowed to go backwards. That's just not... The appeal process is was she right or not? And that's pretty narrow. I understand everything that you put forward. I believe you've heard some sympathy, and we would like to have this worked out. I don't think the cards are stacked against you, but that doesn't mean that we don't have to work together to get this resolved.
Okay. So I can apply for a sign permit and do my thing there prior to this being done. Okay, that's good.
So you would have no problem with us tabling until November? That would be a more...
That would be fine.
Time.
Yeah, we're usually by the end of November, we're usually pretty quiet.
September then?
September.
Yep, that would be fine.
You always meet at the beginning of the month.
If I'm interpreting this correctly, I basically need to apply for a variance.
This gives us between now and December to investigate some of the alternatives that we can't investigate as part of this particular appeal.
Who is that?
Keep that live. That keeps you working with the staff, okay, to go through to find out, okay, you know, what are the paths that could lead us to success, if you will. We do not believe you're misusing the property or that it's not in the best interest and so, but there are things that we're bound by here that we, you know, that we are not allowed to rewrite this as such. And that gives time to work that aspect out and identify the alternatives so then you can make the choices that you would like to make.
Okay.
And I think, at least from my standpoint, too, I don't want to put the burden on the staff either to figure out a way to make this happen for you. I mean, I think that's part of your responsibility.
Yep.
I think the staff needs to make you aware of what the options are and help you make application through the process, but... It's not their job to make this happen either.
No, I understand that.
And I think there are options out there that you won't have to move your business.
Right.
So,
but it's going to cost $6,000 to have it surveyed and replatted. That's what it's going to cost. I mean,
assuming that's the only, that you consider that to be the only option.
You wouldn't necessarily need that for a variance, would you, Leanne?
No, a variance. You wouldn't need to have a survey.
Okay, thank you.
So we have a motion from McGill and a second from Fielmeyer to table the appeal case number APL01-12 until the December 2012 meeting of the Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Miller.
Aye.
Scarlett. Fielmeyer. McGill.
Aye.
Any other business this evening? Staff comments. I see we've got some handouts.
You do. You have the revised regulations. These went into effect July 1st. And as Charlie mentioned, this does include the new residential parcel subdivision process, which goes right to the Board of Supervisors. A more streamlined process for this cases like this where it's on day one. They have a lot that could accommodate two houses, but they each need to be on their individual lots, individual parcels. We did some homework into developing that. So if you want to look that over, those would never come before you, but just so you know that the solution, that this was one of the drivers of putting that in there. I do also want to point you into page 12 of the floodplain regulations, and you're probably wondering why you're getting those, because you don't get those that often. You are the board that if there's a variance to our floodplain management ordinance, it comes before you. We've done one in the 14 years I've been here, so these are even less common than appeals. The floodplain management ordinance is a standalone ordinance. It's not part of our zoning regulations. We follow home rule authority of the Code of Iowa to establish it as a standalone ordinance, but you still are the body that does the decisions on the variances. So if and when a time ever came that you would be acting on a floodplain variance, I will be doing some very quick down and dirty, or whomever is in my position, I should say, doing some quick down and dirty training on floodplain management ordinance to you. And if you ever want some in advance, let me know too. Which is a great segue to training. We have contracted with Gary Taylor from Iowa State Extension to come back over like he did a couple years ago, September 10th. Is the date we've set aside. It's actually our regular scheduled Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, so we'll have to figure out timing of that and maybe work in an evening supper so that we can get everything on the docket. But I'm glad he's coming over, and we'll limit it this time to just Story County boards and commission, the Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission. So the staff, we have some time then to have a dialogue on our specific processes. And then the last question we've had, you all may or may not know, the Planning and Zoning Commission starts at 5:30 rather than 6. I didn't know if that was something that you would like to consider, moving your meeting time up to 5:30. I don't get paid overtime, but the two planners and Kristen on staff all are eligible for overtime, so it is actually another extra half an hour or two that pay overtime on occasionally, too. So I wanted to throw that out there consistently, or some consistency too. A lot of times I catch myself telling people that Board of Adjustment starts at 5:30, just out of habit, and I doubt that anyone's ever showed up at that time because I've always corrected myself. I wanted to throw that out there. Whether or not you would consider maybe a 5:30 start time.
I was going to say that's a difficult part of getting everyone here.
I appreciate
both
consideration. My reaction. And actually for the public too. I mean, I think that 6 o'clock is nice because it allows people to be done with work and come to the Board of Adjustment meeting if they want to. Now I recognize that we don't tend to have big audience. But there's something to be said for that too.
I will say, we hear it both ways too with commissions. Some people say, oh, that's so early, I can't get, so. Then there's some people say, oh, I appreciate it being earlier. I could just go from work to that and then go home. And because honestly, if I go home, I may not come back. You need to decide this evening too. You have your calendar adopted for the year. We've published at 6 o'clock. And you have another member joining you, but that's just till the end of this year. So.
Yep.
Yeah, and then there'll be another vacancy.
I thought it was 2016 on the website.
Oh.
Until 2016, is that wrong? that what it says?
That's what it says, because that's the seat he was filling.
Well,
is that incorrect?
I think so. I'll have to go work with Shelley to fix that. I'll have to look into it.
Then if at the end of the year, then it would just be vacant again, correct? Because that term that he's filling was 2011 to 2016.
I thought his term was up at the end of this year. Okay.
At the end of last year, 2011. So the new term was 2011 to 2016.
That's right. I didn't catch that. Well, Aaron will be staying on till the end of the year. Unless he loves us so much, he'll be on past, but he'll probably be transitioning onto Planning and Zoning Commission.
Any other items of business?
Dan, did you want to ask about next month's meeting in attendance?
We know that Aaron cannot join us next month at the first Wednesday, and we know we have one item that one board member will likely have to declare conflict on. Unless the three of you can guarantee that Vicki's the one that has the conflict, I might as well put it out there. Unless the three of you can guarantee that you will be here, because on that one item, all three of you will have to vote concurrently, or else it won't go forward. We may want to put it out there for maybe considering a special meeting the week after, which I don't know the date of that.
I don't have any reason to believe that I can't be here.
August 1st.
But can we maybe reschedule to August 8th?
And I'll be just getting back on the 8th.
Chances are Aaron will be able to be here on August 8th. Let us talk to him and see if he'll be here on August 8th, and then we can reschedule a meeting to August 8th.
I'll check the 8th tomorrow and send you a note.
That might work for you too.
15th will work.
If we push it back to 15th, it will screw up the entire schedule too much.